then I started to really think, like, what does it mean to constantly be under threat, right? To constantly feel like your identity or who you are is never going to be accepted and embraced. So that was what the NFL helped me to think about. And then when I thought about that, I paid an individual cost, the cost of never being able to be as close as I could to my full and authentic self. I paid a cost from a mental standpoint, from a social interaction standpoint. And then when you think about the fact that women, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, are always at a deficit because of the insidious nature of patriarchy, right? That women are constantly worried about their safety, that they're constantly having to modulate the feelings of someone else so that you can just survive.
And that was Wade Davis, former player for the National Football League. After Wade's football career ended, he became the first LGBT inclusion consultant for professional sports leagues, and this included the NFL. Today, Wade's inspiring work focuses on educating and engaging men in the dialogue of gender equality. I'm Michelle King, and this is She Innovates, a podcast that shares the stories, challenges, and triumphs of women across innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. So one of our goals on the show is to really make sure that we also speak to the men in our audience. We want to include men as much as possible in the discussion about how to champion women at work. That's why I'm really thrilled today to have my good friend Wade Davis on the podcast. Wade is going to be sharing with us why he's made it his personal mission to fight for gender equality. On the show, he's also going to be talking with us about what actions men can take to fight sexism in the workplace today. Hi, Wade. Welcome to the show. How are you going?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. You know, we've known each other for a long time now, and I'm definitely one of your biggest fans. I think your personal fire around gender equality is just, it's amazing. So I wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, you know, where did that come from? Where did your passion around this topic start?
So my supervisor at my old job, Lillian Rivera, who is just an amazing mentor, she gave me my first feminist book, and it was Bell Hooks' Feminist Theory from Margin to Center. And when I was reading it, what Bell Hooks does a really brilliant job of is that she talks about slavery through the lens of a woman. And as I was reading it, it dawned on me that I had never thought about slavery through a woman's lens, like that Black women were slaves just like men, right? They were raped. They also had to carry the child on their back while they're actually working in the fields, and that they were actually raising the son of the master who would one day potentially grow up and murder their child. And I was just like, wow, like, why haven't I thought about it that way? And what I realized was that everything I was fighting for when it came to LGBT equality was rooted in patriarchy and sexism. Everything that I was doing, the root of it was women. And I realized that if I wanted to do any work in the world, it has to start with women. So whether you're talking about men and women, like who's got a different level of oppression, it's women. When you're thinking about race, it's still Black women. If you're about LGBT, it's trans women of color. Like, so the work always goes back to women. And I don't have the academic knowledge to prove this, but I believe if you can do the work to undo patriarchy, you get everything else. I think that patriarchy existed first. So my just firm belief is that I've got to do the work to bring men on a similar journey to what I went on so that we can start to realize that we're in this together, and that when women are oppressed, men are also oppressed too. And that just really started for me to think that I missed the root. You know, I mean, like I was doing work that I thought was really good, but it wasn't at the root.
So, you know, you just touched on your awareness around the roots of patriarchy and sexism. I mean, were you always aware of this, like even in your role at the NFL?
No, I was an idiot in the NFL, Michelle. If you and I had spoke while I was in the NFL, you'd be like, I never want to talk to this guy again. He's an idiot. The reason I say that is because when you're playing in the NFL, like you just want to play football. You know, like everything outside of playing the sport of football is secondary. I mean, it's not even secondary. I mean, like, it is so far down the scale of what's important. The reason being is that, you know, I was trying to do something that very few people had the opportunity to do. So you just don't have the mental bandwidth, or at least you don't think that you do, to do anything else. But when I stopped playing and when I started to think about what was the cost that I paid by not being out in the NFL, then I started to really think, like, what does it mean to constantly be under threat, right? To constantly feel like your identity or who you are is never going to be accepted and embraced. So that was what the NFL helped me to think about. And then when I thought about that, I paid an individual cost, the cost of never being able to be as close as I could to my full and authentic self. I paid a cost from a mental standpoint, from a social interaction standpoint. And then when you think about the fact that women, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, are always at a deficit because of the insidious nature of patriarchy, right? That women are constantly worried about their safety, that they're constantly having to modulate the feelings of someone else so that you can just survive, right? And so thinking about my time in the NFL post-playing and then reading more really helped me to connect the dots.
Yeah, but just help me understand that. So the connecting of the dots, you know, was there one moment that really like struck a chord with you and you became passionate about the topic? Or was this a general buildup sort of over time?
It was a buildup, honestly. It was the more I read, you know, like when you read feminist literature and when you just read books written by women, you can't help but connect the dots. I remember I read Toni Morrison's book, The Bluest Eye. And the first time I read it, I was like, this is a really good book, but I missed what Toni was really trying to do in the book. So for me, it was a real gradual kind of understanding that the work had to always begin with women. But the harder challenge was to make sure that I wasn't doing it for the wrong reasons, right? That I wasn't doing it because I wanted people to pat me on the back or give me praise. Like, that was hard too. Because it does feel good to think that you're making a difference in the world. But there's a fine line between doing it for praise and doing it because you actually deeply believe in the work and that it's right and that it's just and that it's what you're meant to do. And that's still a challenge. I won't lie. Like, I still wrestle with how do I advocate for gender equality without perpetrating the same types of oppression and taking the space from women who've been fighting for it, right? And I try to be intentional. Then when I say something that people think is smart, I say, bell hooks said that, Michelle King said that, or Gloria Steinem said that, and I've just repackaged it in such a way that it's accessible to men, but I don't want to be a part of the same cycle, is what I'm saying.
So, you know, it's interesting that you talk about repeating the same cycle, right? Because I think what's often missed in organizations is the impact of toxic masculinity on men. You know, we don't often talk about that in our field of work. The importance of how, like, you know, when women rise, it's actually beneficial for men too. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the thing that men don't realize is that when you create a space that's more equitable for everyone, it elevates men too, because what happens is that there is an archetype of the type of man that rises in an organization. So every other man starts to comport himself and act in that little tiny way. So it just makes the box even smaller for men as it makes the box smaller for women. So when you create the space for everybody to be embraced and to have equal and equitable opportunities to make it in an organization, that creates more space for men as well. The problem is that for us men, we often don't want to think that there is space for everyone. And that if we can keep women out of it, it makes it more opportunistic for us. But we don't realize that we're turning, you know, the corporate space almost into like the sports space where everyone's got to be a one percenter instead of realizing that we can make a new pie, right? And, you know, like the fact that we made the internet, right? And that now we have iPhones and all of these different things. We can recreate the corporate world in such a way where everyone benefits. But we don't imagine that that's possible because we have grown up in a society of competition and not a society of solidarity. So how do we actually start to reimagine that there's enough space and that we're talented enough and innovative enough that all of us grow when it's more equitable and fair for everyone?
In February this year, Wade launched Blind Spots. It's a training program that supports men in leadership positions to understand the issues women face in the workplace. Blind Spots is just one of the many initiatives that Wade is leading to try and solve the systemic problems related to race, gender, and inequality in the workplace. So Wade, you're doing a lot, right? So you've got your work with the NFL and you're spearheading some training initiatives like Blind Spots. Could you share a little bit more about what your work involves?
I would say the first thing that I learned is that I had to enter these conversations with athletes and men in the corporate space as well from a space where I did not need to be right. And what I mean that is that if you and I are having a conversation and my only goal is to make you see things my way, then I'm actually not interested in anything you have to say. Then all I'm interested in is me, my objectives, and my goals. And no one responds to a know-it-all. So I had to start learning how to ask smarter questions and not feel like being right was all I needed to be. So what that morphed into was me doing trainings and workshops that really started to be much more experiential and engaging men in ways where they could say things that someone from the outside may deem as problematic. But just the fact that they're being honest means that I've created the conditions for us both to grow. And then it moved to me saying, hey, these players are actually curious about what it means to be LGBT. What if I built something to actually bring these athletes and these LGBTQ kids together? So we partnered with to build this thing called High Five. And what High Five is I take NFL players and coaches to visit local youth-serving LGBTQ organizations to now remove this gulf that often exists between athletes and LGBTQ kids. And what you do is you do it in a way where the athletes aren't just there to give their five-minute speech and leave. No, it's an exchange. Awareness, connection, action. So building Blind Spots was just really me thinking about how impactful that had been, taking that into the corporate space. But it all begins with creating the conditions for people to be vulnerable, honest, and feel as if they can be clumsy in an issue that oftentimes they've never talked about. So when a man says, I'm so shocked about this Me Too movement, he's probably being honest and he needs to read more too, right? So how do you hold in tension the fact that he should have known about this work, but the fact that he doesn't creates an opportunity, and can I do it in such a way where he feels like he's on a journey with me and not on a journey by himself? The other thing that I try to do in the corporate world is reach white men. So when I say things like the 7 out of 10 suicides in America are by men, and most of them are by white men, then people go, well, maybe there's a way that we can start to include them in the conversation so that they can feel like we see them too. Because there's a reason that the group who's supposed to have the highest levels of power and privilege are also the group that has the highest levels of suicide, right? So how do you start to make the work truly inclusive where white men can be a part of the conversation, that they can be heard, but they can also know that the work that you're going to do is not going to start with them?
So Wade, you know, could you tell us a little bit about the impact? You're doing all this amazing work. I mean, how are men responding? How are they changing as a result of these initiatives?
The greatest impact is, so after you close down the distance and an athlete will say to me, what can I do now? The issue has become personal. Now they want to know what tangible steps can they take. So that means that an athlete will say, if I wear an LGBTQ flag on my sneakers, right? Is that a big deal? And then I'll go, hell yeah, right? So what they want to do next is do action. So whether it's saying, hey, like, I actually want to partner with you on your next LGBTQ camp, or I want to talk to my son about it, or I want to talk to someone else about it, the next level is them actually wanting to take action. And that it's not something that is fleeting, and that there are issues that they're truly wrestling with. In the corporate space, what guys will say to me is like, you know what, Wade, I had no clue that my fantasy football league was an informal mentoring system. So I want to figure out ways to engage the women in these types of things so that I'm building a relationship with them too. So it's really just now them coming up with tangible action. Or the most exciting example for me is when a friend of mine calls me up and says, hey, that thing that we talked about, that patriarchy stuff, and they're still kind of wrestling with the idea of it, I saw it, you know, or I spoke up when something happened at work. You know, like, that's what I really get the most excitement from, is that men are actually taking action, or they're talking to their other friends about it.
So Wade, look, we're about to wrap up, and I always like to end my shows with the same question. You know, what advice do you have for our listeners, particularly for men in the audience, on the 2 to 3 things they can do to really support women in the workplace.
So what I would love to see more men do is say, I want to start a book club. We're going to read books written by women and about women. And we're going to sit in rooms and we're going to talk about it. So the first thing is men have to educate ourselves. Like, it's really great that we are thinking about things to do and want to do things, but we've got to have a baseline of education, of experience. So that would be the first thing I would do. The second thing that I think that men have to be really intentional to think about is, how can I, in moments when friends of mine say things that are sexist or what have you, how can I practice speaking up, right? And what I mean by that is, like, not calling their friends out or calling them idiots, but being smarter with asking their friends questions. So if a friend of yours says something that you know is sexist, say, hey, what do you mean by that? Just simple as that, right? Just asking what and how questions with their friends, with people that they engage with in their daily lives, right? To show their friends or to model to their friends that their words and their actions, you're not okay with. Like, we have got to get better at backing up our words with actual actions. And it's not okay for you to say that you support women, but you allow things around you to happen. So when you are in your corporate meeting and a woman, she says something and someone talks over her, like, how do you say, hey, we're talking over X, Y, and Z? Or if she says something and a man repeats it 10 minutes later and he gets credit for it, like, how do you start to actually model for other men around you and be greater at taking risk? Like, we as men have to take more risk.
So I think we can all agree Wade is absolutely fantastic. It's really a delight for me to share work like this and people like this who are advocating for gender equality. What's really amazing though about Wade is that he's just so open and honest about what he doesn't know. You know, by starting there and by admitting what you don't know, I think Wade's been able to invite women to share their stories, and he's also eager to learn, right, by reading books or taking initiative to try and understand the issue of gender equality. So I guess my takeaway from that, though, is that if Wade can do it, anybody can do it. I really hope you all enjoyed our conversation today, and thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week.
From the Human Group, She Innovates is a podcast created with support from SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.